welcome to the 125th episode of the Not Your Mama's Gamer podcast, a podcast where we talk about games and gaming from a feminist perspective. My name is Samantha Blackman, and I'm an associate professor here at Purdue University in wonderful West Lafayette, Indiana, where I talk about, read about, write about, dream about, amongst other things, video games. So tonight, we are joined by a special guest. We are joined by the fabulous, brilliant, wonderful Apple Cider Mage.
Hey!
As well as our usual bevy of brilliant bitches. So let's start by...
Excuse me.
Hey!
And we'll start by talking to Apple Cider Mage and having her do an introduction. Tell us about yourself.
Hello, I'm Apple Cider. Well, I have changed the mage to witch to now properly introduce more witchery to my brand. Hashtag brand. Most people know me as Nico on the internet. I have a regular job where I work in, I'll just say the retail sector and just kind of leave it at that. But mostly, most people will know me online from my previous work, which was on the very wonderful podcast Justice Points, which was also a gaming and feminism podcast that I hosted with my friend Zufi, and we just ended that at the end of 2015, and I've been taking a break. Yeah, I also do a little bit of writing, I do a little bit of podcasting, but mostly I've been taking a break and just like shit posting on Twitter.
My people.
Yeah, that's kind of my thing. I like cracking jokes on Twitter and talking about media criticism, specifically a lot with TV and film, as well as video games, as well as the images of women and feminism in media. That's kind of like my wheelhouse, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So, which part of your hashtag brand do you want us to use tonight? Because, you know, I'm just going to start making up names for you.
You can call me Apple, you can call me Cider, you can call me Nico, just don't call me late for dinner.
Well, now.
Now she's going to call you late for dinner.
I'm a rebel. I just want to say, before we get to the rest of the introductions, I took a nap earlier and I dreamed about you. But
well, I didn't know this was realistic. That kind of podcast.
Listen, I know it's really obnoxious when people talk about their dreams, but this I thought was pretty funny. Everything else was realistic, but you were just like this little series of animated avatars.
Oh, okay.
Walking around.
That's true. That's how I am.
Yeah.
I don't exist in a corporeal form like other humans. I'm just sort of a series of animated images that just sort of moved the world.
My deep subconscious.
Yes. No, that's accurate. I'm actually, you should really look into your dreams and how prophetic you are. You might be like an oracle or something.
Shit, I'm going to charge money for that.
You got to make money somehow, man.
Talk about him alone. All right. Oh, that was all. I just wanted to tell that little story. I've been waiting for like...
All right, so Alicia Karabinus, you're next up on my screen. Who are you, darling?
Prophet, didn't we just go over this?
Yes.
Oh my god.
I'm a PhD student at Purdue University, hence the nap earlier because I'm exhausted.
You can't take naps. There's no naps. No naps.
There's naps. I study retcom, but really I do research on angry young internet men.
Okay, so I have to ask, does the research on angry internet men also come with an academically funded, like, collection of alcohol? Is that something you get as part of the department? I mean, like, what's the budget for that?
Do
you
get am I allowed to officially comment on this?
You on the alcohol budget?
I will say that it's not an official budget, but certainly people have contributed to in the past.
Yeah.
That happens. That's the thing that happens. I mean, that's the only way you make it through grad school is with alcohol.
Yeah, that doesn't even have to do with angry emo, man. That's just
Hashtag grad school. Next.
Charlotte Hyde, why don't you tell us about yourself, darling?
Okay, I'm Charlotte Hyde. I am a PhD candidate in rec comp. I study tech comp. I'm the resident Lego scholar. I'm graduating. I will not be a grad student anymore, finally.
Who will you be,
honey? A living wage!
An assistant professor at Kansas State. I'm very excited.
Woo-hoo! Yay! Woo!
Charlotte, will you sponsor my alcohol next year?
Alcohol for tonight's podcast, sponsored by Charlotte
Hyde. Oh, does that mean grapefruit candy for everybody?
Hey, as long as it's lying in Google, I'm probably in.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, to Bianca, you're next on my list. Darling, who are you?
Hello, I am Bianca Batty. I am also a PhD candidate at Purdue University. Not rec comp, though. I am literary studies. So, you know, that's me. But I also look at video games as a form of contemporary narrative. So in the midst of thinking about that right now for my preliminary exam, so that's a whole lot of fun.
I hear that for prelims, you just sit around and drink tea and eat cake.
Oh, totally.
I mean, that's what I did. Totally got me a job. Totally, yeah.
So much cake happening.
I did drink some Line and Google. Line and Google.
Right. Well, there's that component to
the I mean, not while I was taking them, but prior to.
Prior to, post to,
and right after. Yeah. Oh, right after. Yeah.
But it's going well, I think. You know, lots of fun stuff to talk about with video games, literature, and all that jazz. So
I concur.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool. And last, but definitely not least, Ashley, darling, who are you?
Well, let's see. I'm also a PhD student. Can you guys, huh?
Yeah.
What? Okay.
Can hear you.
I said, I'm also a PhD student. And I am in the second language studies program. Looking at teaching second language writing, but I also like to study video games, apparently. I got roped in last semester, and I'm not allowed to leave.
I have you locked down now for too many collab projects, so.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I'm stuck. I'm stranded.
Mm-hmm.
I found that I really like to talk about ethics, and now I like to talk about war culture in video games.
I feel so awed by the presence of so many cool academics, because I feel like the least academic person here. So this is so neat. So is everybody here basically becoming or has already become a doctor?
Everyone is becoming or very close to, like Charlotte is very close to.
Mm-hmm. She's like right there.
Mm-hmm. You can see it from here.
I think Bianca and I have 3 more years?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. After our prelims, we have 3 more years.
Correct. Yeah.
I'm not going to make it. They're going to put me in prison at some point. So I'm just fucking around.
Not we're going to kick her out, but we're going to put her in prison. Right. I just want to know what the hell she planning on doing to go to jail.
Not even jail, prison.
Yeah. Mysterious shit.
Wow.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm not going to prison.
I thought I was a mental institution, but she went to prison.
Well, some people internalize and others externalize.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, we're all on the path, except for Sam, who's like our mom.
Basically. I'm not old enough to be your mama or Charlotte. Now, some other folks, I may be old enough to be their mother, but not yours or Charlotte.
You know,
we better
roll on, because due to our technical difficulties this evening, I've already really started on the what are you drinking part. So, gotta get going.
Yes. I'm sort of stuck on Sam being my mom, because I think she's only like 5 years older than me.
All right, on that note, so what we'll do is we'll go ahead and roll on with our usual what you're playing, what you're reading, what you're drinking. Those are the fun things. And we will try to be polite, as we usually are when we have a guest, and ask Nico first, what have you been playing lately?
I have been super hyper-focused on Stardew Valley, which is so good.
I blame you.
Like, I never played a Harvest Moon game before, or, you know, a game of that style, you know, farm simulator, you know, that sort of thing. And I really think that what Concerned Ape has done with basically filling the PC market with a farm sim, Harvest Moon alike, basically, was just sheer genius. And I heard he's, like, made, like, $10 million now. Off this game that he worked on for 4 years by himself. Yeah, just a really very large amount of sales. And it shows because it's a really fun game. I'm really hooked on it. It's a great, like, wind down after the end of a really long day kind of game where I just, like, plant some crops, pet my cows, talk to some villagers, mine some stuff in a cave, fish. Like, that's... It's great. I play it in the morning before I go to work, and I play it at night before I go to bed. And it's just, it's so great. It's very relaxing. Plus, you could get married to ladies in it. It's great.
That was the best enthusiastic response I've
ever had. Seriously, when I heard that that was a thing you could do, I, like, got the game immediately and set my sights on, like talking to all of the, like, eligible ladies in the town, and I decided that I was going to marry Maru, and she's so cute, and,
picturing you now as, like, a new animated character rolling around going, hey, girl! Hey!
Okay, so I have to admit this, Nico. I started playing the game. When I met Maru, I was like, oh, you are going to be my wife.
Yes. Right? Like, she's the best. And she builds robots, and she's, like, a little bit awkward and shy, but she's also just, like, so genuine, and she's super into science. Like, a lot of people go for Abigail because Abigail has, like, purple hair, and she's, like, you know, into video games, and she's, like, a little bit gothic, and it just, like, I don't know, like, everybody was like, oh, romance her, and I'm just like, eh, that's, like, romancing myself, and so I was, like, this little weird, so I met Maru, and I just, like, fell in love with her, and I started just, like, bringing her strawberries every day from my farm, and because that's, like, her favorite food.
Shit, I'll marry you. Come on.
Here, I brought this strawberry over. You know, and then, like, running away. And I also actually got a mod. There's a lot of, like, really kind of cool customization mods that you can get for the game. I got, like, an easier fishing mod because fishing is really hard and difficult in the game. And I also got an appearance customization that made a bunch of the villagers in the village basically not white anymore. And one of the customizations that came with Maru is that, first of all, they made her look slightly older, which is great because in the base game, she kind of looks very young, and that's weird. But the update to Maru gave her, like, slightly more adult glasses, but also gave her, like, way curlier hair with, like, purple tips and, like, a more adult, like, outfit. And I was like, okay, that's the Maru I'm marrying. Not the 12-year-old that the original game has, but, like, you know, an adult who is also a cute scientist, and I don't know, I just love her, and now she lives in my house, and we're, like, married, because I gave her a mermaid shell, it's great, so yeah, Stardew Valley's really cool, that's what I've been playing, and other than that, I got a mobile game called Sailor Moon Drops, which is I wouldn't say it's a match 3 game, but it's a match 3 type of game, but it's slightly more strategy because it's not like Bejeweled where it's just timed and you're trying to make as many matches as possible. Mm-hmm. It's you are given a set number of moves and you have to match three in a very strategic way, I guess is a good way of putting it. And it gives you like Sailor Moon characters that you can collect and you know, like that sort of thing. And like characters can help you out and you get like buffs and stuff. So it's kind of like a match three kind of smushed together with a match three kind of smushed together with like the other kind of match three where it's like the RPG fight style, like puzzle and it's like they smushed sort of like Puzzle and Dragons mixed with like Bejeweled basically is mm-hmm. kind of a good way of putting it. And I also got into Overwatch beta just now. So yeah, aww. That's what my week would be.
Oh, I am so jealous. I have been wanting to be in Overwatch beta forever.
Yeah. Same.
Damn it.
And I was surprised that I didn't get flagged earlier because I usually do get into Blizzard games pretty fast just because I used to be part of the fan community and so, you know, that sort of stuff. But I just got in, so I guess I'll be trying that out. So, yeah, that's what I've been playing, what I've been up to. So,
cool. All right. Alicia, what about you? What you been playing, darling?
Well, I haven't been playing that much because I've been busy coding.
Everybody's so busy.
Mm. Yes, but I've been busy making a game. Me and AV are working on some projects, super secret, secret squirrel projects for...
super secret.
In fact, after the podcast tonight, we have to write a conference proposal. Because, you know, the work never ends.
Right.
But I have managed to do a little bit of The Flame in the Flood, which is still my obsession. Though, I have to say, I was really upset because I got a game-breaking bug. And I had a great endless game going. Oh, it was so good. I had so many things. I even had bear pants because I killed a bear. You guys don't know how hard it is to kill a bear. It's hard. It took a lot of resources, and I was so proud. I, like, ran around my house, like, in my real-life house, going, I killed a bear! and I was so excited, and, like, I don't know, 15 minutes later, I got a dead end in the river. Like, it just didn't generate water.
No.
And I was like, what? What? No! And I kept restarting and trying to go around, like, surely there's a channel, there's something. There was nothing. I almost cried. I'm not even gonna lie. And then a couple of days later, there was an update. And they're like, we fixed some things, like, you know, the river, which is the central part of the game. I'm like, fuck you guys! So I restarted, and now I have another really good game going. It took a few tries, but now I've got, like, some really, really fly clothes. I'm all in, like, wolf gear. I got, like, the Elder Wolf jacket. I've got tons of food. I got a good raft. I'm cruising almost to day 40, which will pass my old record, so.
Ooh.
Whoa. And I played some Left 4 Dead too, which I hadn't done in a long time.
I saw that.
God, I love that game so much. I hate the community. Love the game.
I hate that game.
I hate that game. It's so fun.
No.
So in class, we talked about the team from Left 4 Dead 1 is better than the team for Left 4 Dead 2, with the exception of Coach, who's awesome.
I hate both of them.
I don't think we're friends anymore.
I thought it was going to be like, you,
but
I was going to be like Dead Rising, and it's just not. So
that's because it's like Left 4 Dead, which is awesome.
I know. It's not awesome.
Yeah. We'll fight about this later. Most of my free time, quote unquote, has gone to trying to figure out how to put things together in video game code.
Ooh, wow.
Next.
What about Ashley? What you playing, darling?
Let's see. The usual State of Decay. Because why not? I love it. there's Neko Hatsumi, of course. There's Miitomo. There's, I started Call of Duty. Black Ops 3, and that's traumatizing and stressful. and this war of mine.
Hi, I'm Ashley. I like to be really, really unhappy all the time.
All my game choices are just horrible.
They're horrible, so yeah.
And bloody and gory and sad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I need to get a mental health checkup.
This actually isn't a podcast. It's an intervention. We're actually here to talk to you about your video game habits.
Play some Dead Rising. It's not horrible.
I mean, I'm doing it for good reason. I want to talk about war culture from a feminist perspective. But this is torturous.
Sometimes you need a little sometimes you need to get a little Rayman Legends in there, mix it up.
Yeah, that would be a better recommendation than Dead Rising. Don't get me wrong, I love Dead Rising, but there's a lot of dead babies in Dead Rising.
I was being sarcastic.
Babies?
I was being sarcastic with Dead Rising, but mix it up with a little bit of Rayman Legends. She's happy.
I have Unravel.
I don't know what that is, but it looks fun. It looks fun.
It's great. Yeah. It's cute. It's like reading a book.
It's really stressful for me, though, so I don't... when he gets small, I'm like, oh, God, Yarny!
You're dying! Don't die!
Oh, my God.
In all the games.
Maybe a lot of feelings. We're going to change our name to the Feelings Cast.
Maybe I'm just projecting. We're probably just projecting what PhD feels like. Death.
Yeah, no.
Oh, that's not funny.
April's the worst. It's all better after this.
It is the cruelest month.
You're lying.
I'm not lying.
You are lying.
No, it's just after April, you'll be fine until next April.
Yeah.
No, the hell
you say.
No. I am prelimming.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Prelims suck.
Nothing is going to be great.
Everything is awful.
No, you're right. Everything will be awful until about, September? Sorry.
On that note...
Okay, let's move on.
Charlotte, what are you playing?
apparently, Dreams is what I do. But Lego. So I've been playing Lego Dimensions, which I'm actually almost done with, which is surprising to me. Because that has not happened to me before with Lego games, because they sort of bore me. But I guess that's all I can handle right now. I've also been building the new Lego Maze.
Oh,
which
was
an idea. Yeah, it was an idea that I wasn't going to buy, but I did because I have amazing powers of justification for buying Lego.
Mm-hmm.
So I remembered that when I was younger, I would draw intricate mazes. Yeah. So I had to have it because of that.
Yeah, my son is super into drawing mazes.
Oh, I drew some mazes. I wish I still had them because they were, and I can't even remember how I did it. But I did it. So cool. I've been building the new Lego Ideas maze and I like it. I'm back in the place I was a couple of years ago where I shouldn't be building Lego as much as I should be disassembling Lego because I'm moving. But yeah, it's hard because I'm addicted. I think my sister's going to get addicted, too, because she started working for the company that owns the Legoland things. So she gets a discount. And she was, at first, she didn't care about this, but now it seems like...
There's only so long you can ignore Lego.
I know. So now my mom's like, well, she wants the Doctor Who set, and she wants the Big Bang Theory set, and I'm like, oh, it's all over.
Yep.
She's going to be me.
Real soon. All right. Bianca, what you playing, darling?
I have been trying to get through some games that I've been doing for my research. So I just finished playing The Last of Us. Lots of issues of fatherhood in that game. That has been really interesting.
I have a lot of feelings about that game.
Yeah, I do too. having a hard time formulating, so I guess it's a good thing I'm going to be writing about it soon. So, I don't know. There's a lot of really interesting things, like the way we think about temporary fatherhood and how that idea, that sort of temporary nature is, like, normalized and how that contributes to his, like, anti-hero status, right? Mm-hmm. The way that genders also his relationship with Ellie. So, I don't know. I've been thinking about a lot of issues with motherhood and fatherhood in that game, and how those roles also seem to work in opposition with each other in that game. So I don't know. Lots of things to think about. Really, I don't know, fascinating stuff for me. And
I love you.
As problematic as all this shit often is, I just love it so much. It's so much fun.
So here's what Bianca's prelim exam discussion, post-prelim exam discussion, and dissertation defense is going to look like. It's going to be me, Bianca, and 2 to 3 mm-hmm. other faculty members sitting in a room with Bianca mm-hmm. and I talking about video games for 2 hours, and everybody else sitting around pissed off.
Yeah, I should do a critical let's play like the whole time for the defense.
This is the first defense where I've been like, I want to go.
That would be so fun. Okay, that's a weird way of describing it, but. I don't know. It's all really stressful and hard, but like I try to remind myself that really I love this shit a lot, and I think that it's all just super interesting, and it's so fun for me to get to talk about fucking video games like as literature, you know.
Fuck
so
yes.
It's really fun ultimately at the end of the day. That's what I keep reminding myself.
But getting to the end of the day sometimes can be like a
right.
thing.
It can be. Yeah, it's still hard. It's really hard, but it's also really fun. I really, really love the critical analysis of this shit. There's so much interesting discussion around all of this. So, I love it.
Well, I'll go first, because we spent a long time talking about what we've been playing. Whoopsie. I'll go first. I'll go next, and I'll go fast. I've been playing some Mario & Luigi Paper Jam on my 3DS, because it's always in my bag. I've been playing a little bit of The Division, not too much because I haven't had much time because we've been traveling. What I've been playing a lot of on my Xbox is Letter Quest, which is, you know, half Boggle, half Kill Monsters. So you make words out of this selection of letters in order to kill monsters. And I love weird word games, go figure, right? So I've played way more Letter Quest than I want to admit in the last week. And then the game that I am playing, right, because I'm playing simply to be a bitch, is Miitomo. And anybody who's friends with me on Miitomo knows this, is that I've been playing Miitomo just to make snide ass comments about Nintendo. It's like, so what are you playing this weekend? I'm playing a game made by anybody that's not going to throw their female employees under the bus because they've been subject to a hate campaign. So that's kind of the way I've been playing Miitomo, because it's fun. So that's about all I've been playing, and I think that gets everybody. So here's a question. Is anybody reading anything? We'll go faster this way. Is anybody reading anything interesting?
We just got to reread. Ashley and I just got to reread Adrienne Shaw's book, because we led discussion in class.
Oh my God. It's good.
It's such a good book.
It's so good.
There are some moments where I'm like, I don't know about this, but the book as a whole is, I think, really necessary. I talked about this in class, but doing something that goes beyond like survey data and actually talks to people about the nuance of their relationship between like games and embodiment and avatars is really important.
Yeah.
Also, Adrienne Shaw is just cool as fuck.
And I feel like the crux of her argument is like one that it blew my mind when I read it. Like, wait a minute. So representation matters because people don't identify with characters? Like, that's what? <You know>? Okay, awesome. Like, such a really interesting reversal of that argument. I don't know. I love that.
Are y'all rude asses? Nico, you been reading anything interesting?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I am actually, it's funny, my reading tastes actually diverge quite a bit from my like my media appetite, which is, you know, a lot of like video game criticism and stuff like that. But the book I actually am reading is The Drunken Botanist, The Plants That Create the World's Greatest Drinks by Amy Stewart. Which is, if you don't know Amy Stewart, she is quite a prolific nonfiction writer who most of her work is rounded out by basically like botany history, like plants and other historical topics of kind of that nature. She wrote Wicked Plants, The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother and Other Botanical Atrocities and stuff like that. And she paired up with a couple of other like mixologists and food historians to basically create a compendium of stories and recipes and alcohol history about where alcohol comes from, what plants create the alcohols that we really like and stuff like that. So that's been just a wonderful read to take along to like the bar. It's very light. It's very informative. I'm really big into food history. Like, that's kind of my jam right now. So if you are really interested in kind of where the food and the things that we drink come from, you know, what their origins are, what, you know, what they're made out of, that sort of stuff, I would highly suggest The Drunken Botanist. Also, really good recipes in there, too. So if you want to make a bunch of cocktails, try it.
I would like to say I just looked it up on Amazon and it's $1.99 on Kindle right now.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. That's almost free.
That is almost free.
Yeah, it needs
$5. I'm like, whatever.
I have a hardcover copy because it was like a Christmas gift, but seriously, like, yeah, if it's like $1.99 on Kindle, get it. It's, you're gonna love it. It's amazing if you drink as much as I do. It's very informative. So, yeah.
Here's my we'll get plug. To that in a minute.
We'll get to the drinking part in just a second. Well, see, y'all are reading fun stuff. I've been reading about public shaming and slut shaming. So,
me too. Same book. Yeah, same book.
I've been reading. Yeah, John Ronson. So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And
oh, you did? You got that?
I did. And I'm Leora so Tannenbaum's I Am Not a Slut.
Yeah, did you buy those digitally?
Of course I bought them digitally. Yes.
Okay. Can we talk about public shaming?
Yes.
I want to know if you like the book.
You what?
I want to know if you like the book.
Do I like the book? It's different from what I thought it was going to be. So correct me if I'm wrong, but it's all about people who've been publicly shamed, and tries to get you to think about, how public shaming operates, not only for people that we generally see as being victims, scare quotes, right? But also people that get publicly shamed who are generally assholes or who are completely in the wrong.
Yes, but I think that's what's fascinating to me about it is even in the cases where people are completely wrong, is that as a society where we want to go?
Yeah.
With this, I don't want to get all into pro here,
it's
but yeah.
Hard. Like, this skews into my wheelhouse. It's tough, okay? I was looking at my Twitter account the other day, and I've had a Twitter account now for almost 9 years. And I've seen a lot of this shit go down. Like, you know, where something starts kind of small, people are like, look at this person showing their ass over here. And then 3 hours later, they're fired, you know? And on the one hand, there's something to be said for actually being publicly accountable for the bullshit that people say without thinking about it. But on the other hand, ruining your whole life, like, I don't know. Like,
because it circumvents the whole, like, idea of a justice system at all. Like, we're just doing it to them. And I don't know. Like, okay, so.
But what is justice?
I don't know. But okay, so, like, okay. Oh, I don't know. I just think it's fascinating, I guess.
We need to do a whole podcast on this.
We do. Yeah. We all need to read the book and do a podcast. Because it's interesting, right? Because we've seen so much public shaming lately, especially with, like, the crazy racists at Trump rallies. And,
right.
You know, I mean, it's like, but, just, you know, at what point, right, is it public shaming if you know, you got, like the dude who was, you know, quote unquote, going into the Marines and punched the girl, right? And then, I mean, but he posted the pictures or was all in her face screaming. He posted those pictures on social media himself. It's just that people then went and found his account and said, okay, look, he's proud of this. And then, the Marines were like, well, we don't want you. I mean,
right. Yes, exactly. Mm. And I'm not saying that they're wrong. It's just, I think it's an interesting way to think about how we've all changed, like, over the past generations with the internet. The internet's a thing and people don't understand it. And it, and it's not even just the whole, like, we're going to come get you as a mob, which I have problems with, but it's also the, I'm going to post this picture and then it's sort of my fault because I posted, I don't even know. Oh my God.
Yeah, well, what about the guy? Oh, go ahead. Guess first.
Yeah. Like, the whole, I mean, there's a lot of interesting history to mine, in like the kind of like the cultural mores around shaming and how it was seen as an effective tool for matters that fell outside of the legal jurisdiction, but rather matters of, you know, cultural and moral uprightness, I guess, and I think, like anything, you know, the historical context is really fascinating, but it's like the Puritans did not have social media, like, and I think shame as a concept is a specific tool, and the tool loses its efficacy when you no longer consistently can hold accountable the people wielding it, the size of the community, the stretch of the message, and no accounting for the context that change is occurring in.
Yeah, exactly. So there's 1,000,000,000,000 people right now that would tell us that Allison Rapp should have been publicly shamed because she was a prostitute. Right? Yeah.
But there are like no proof that 1,000 people saying that right now.
Right. They're saying it right now. But they don't even care about the facts or whether or not that even matters. Right. But I mean, they're just picking up on each other's tweets and redoing it. And it's scary as hell.
Yeah. To watch. I think that's a feint. I don't even think that's shaming. I don't even think that they like, that's a cudgel. That's a cudgel at this point, because if they were adhering to the idea of an efficacious tool and a community and proximity to said community, they would also need to basically get their house in order and also know that being a sex worker is not something you shame people over.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I guess my fear comes from, I think that she probably thinks it's shaming because it's happening.
Yeah. It's like, but it's like they think that they're in the right, and it's like, guys.
That's what I mean by justice, though. Like, I'm not defending our justice system, but that's what I mean by there's no process to this. It's just,
but the, but not the, nothing.
I think the difference. I'm sorry. Did I cut you off?
I'll wait.
But I think that's the interesting thing, because I'm reading these two books at the same time, so there's lots of crossover between the slut shaming and the public shaming. And I think that the interesting thing to think about Allison Rapp and whether or not it's public shaming, one, shaming the way that Ronson is talking about it is simply stating the facts and going from a moral high ground. Or exposing facts. Well, yeah, sort of, right? But exposing the facts and then going from a certain moral high ground from that point. Now, none of that's going on in the case of Allison Rapp because, you know, really, there is no proof. And two, can you really publicly shame someone who doesn't see their acts as being shameful? Or if the acts, I mean, and to talk about what is shameful and what's not, right? Is that, mm-hmm. I mean, is sex work shameful if it's legal? Right? I mean, these are questions we have to ask.
I guess it's like, I guess I get caught up on these are the facts that these cases have come up with. And I'm not sure the punishment always fits the crime with the specific cases that he uses. So one of the cases he uses is the first case, I forget his name, but it's the guy that plagiarized.
The
Bob Dylan quotes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie. I read that and I was like, this just seems so minor for all of this uproar. So I'm not sure the punishment fits the crime. And that's where I get fascinated by what the internet does.
Yeah, and that's, again, it's like the efficacy of shame and shaming loses quite a bit because it's not a tightly controlled community with a very codified set of moral or ethical compasses kind of guiding the center. But then it's like you think back again to the historical context of like,
yes,
guess what people thought witch hunts were?
Yeah.
Shaming women who were acting evilly, and that was considered logically and ethically consistent with those communities when, you know, in our day we're like, no, you were mad at women, you were mad at them and you wanted to get rid of them. Yes. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, and so it's
and that's where I get so
I'm sorry.
That's just where I get so terrified. I'm just
because it's people in power using what should be a tool of people that are often disenfranchised to call out the injustices on, you know, an ethical or moral level. It's the people who already have the power to enact the legal systems or the punishment systems, then taking those and making it seem like an ethical or a moral panic, you know, I guess is... I see shame and I see things like satire as being really powerful tools of the disenfranchised and the marginalized. Mm-hmm. And that is not what is happening in the, you know, kind of the contemporary situations that we're often talking about.
No. Mm-hmm. And okay. So let me draw two different situations. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's I don't know if you guys remember his name, I think was Jared Roth, but his Facebook name was Jairus Hilton. And he was the one, he and his friends had a conversation about the photo that had the young black child in the background. And they started having conversations like, oh, I didn't know you were a slave owner. Oh, please tell me his name is Toby. Oh, and all of that. Yeah. You know, this just incredible racist exchange. And like, no room for nuance or context or joke. Like, this was just some racist shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it got out and it went viral and he got fired and whatever. So there's situations like that where... it is not a codified like set of rules within society, but it also is, and it's a really weird, flexible gray area that I think is fascinating, sometimes scary, but also it demonstrates both the benefits and the drawbacks of social
media. Yeah. So I hear your conflict. So well, the second story you talked. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Hang on, and then you have something like. Not just the Allison Rapp story, but her husband's story.
Yeah.
Which is not just a matter of, oh, we found some things and we think it's him, so we're going to post him everywhere. But it is an act of weaponized harassment with a specific end goal. They want him to kill himself.
Yeah, that's not shaming.
There are
shaming.
A lot of jokes about it. This is going beyond like anything else. And this is some serious shit. Mm-hmm. There are people sending him pictures of nooses on Twitter.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Telling him that, you know, at this point, man, you should just go ahead and do it. It would just be so much easier.
Wow.
Yeah.
That should be illegal.
Yes.
You would think it is, right? It only makes sense. We see that same kind of deliberate pushing toward... suicide, especially when people are hated by or a part of some kind of or a victim of some kind of organized campaign of harassment and hatred, if they are known to be clinical depressives or have talked about suicidal tendencies before, those are the things specifically that they target, right? Yeah, you're right. We're going to keep coming after you over and over again until you kill yourself. You should kill yourself. Wouldn't it be easier if you were dead? These things over and over and over again, that, it should be illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely and completely.
Mm-hmm. But it yes, but.
Yes, but.
It becomes really difficult in some cases, not in this one, in some cases, to measure that online.
But that's what scares me.
But this is, like I said, this is fodder for like a whole other 2 hours on this easily. And you guys, I want to talk about what I'm drinking.
I'm going to teach a whole course on this. So
this is what's becoming the main body of my research. So I obviously have a lot of feelings.
maybe you can Skype in my class.
I'll be there for you.
Okay. All right, that was supposed to be a quick what you're reading.
That was supposed to be.
Anyway.
So what are folks drinking? Nico, what you drinking?
Because it's a Thursday and not a Friday, and I do have to be at work tomorrow by like 7, I am drinking a non-alcoholic drink, but it is the Arnold Palmer tall can, 99 cents from like Arizona. Half and half iced tea lemonade, strawberry flavored.
Wow. Like specific shit you got working there.
Yeah.
Okay, so Arnold Palmers are some of my favorite non-alcoholic drinks.
Yes.
But the summer drink of the podcast, because it's what I drink all the time, is called a Sneaky Sneaky. This is actually what it's called. It was a drink that was done at Shug's Juke Joint in Atlanta. That's the first place I had it. It is sweet tea plate flavored vodka and lemonade.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I
was really good. Suspicious of this shit at first, and then she made me one and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I've had peach tea vodka, I think. Peach tea vodka or peach tea flavored liqueur. I've had something similar to that, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Apple flavored moonshine and lemonade also taste very good. Two great things that go great together.
That sounds like a quick trip to the land of fucked up, is what that sounds like.
That's the Maserati of getting to the land of fucked up.
I'm tweeting that.
Ooh, okay. So, Alicia, what are you drinking?
A bottle of wine. I brought the whole thing in and I just poured the last of it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of wine, darling?
Oh, I'm just drinking a Moscato. I had a rough day, so I brought, when I was getting ready with the podcast, I got my corkscrew and I got this bottle of wine and I just brought it all into my office.
Yep.
And I'm using my Write Like a Motherfucker cup with a glass. Shout out to the Rumpus and Dear Sugar, and I just poured the last of it, so we're gonna have to, I don't know, I'm gonna have to go get another beverage in a minute, so. But I do have a bottle of whiskey in my office, because that's how I roll.
There you go.
Grad school. Hashtag grad school.
Mm-hmm. It's fun stuff. It's fun.
All right. So, Charlotte, what you drinking?
I am just drinking summer shandy, because I was too lazy to go find grapefruit shandy.
Aww. You know summer's what? Now that I love the grapefruit shandy so much, I had some summer shandy lately, and it's just a lesser beverage.
It very much is. That is totally correct. But sometimes I'm just tired, so.
So you drink with clothes.
Yeah. If they have summer, I'll get it. It's fine. The grapefruit is far and away the better beverage.
Is that Lining Google?
Yeah.
You can get that on tap here because I live in Milwaukee, which is a stone throw from.
We can get summer shandy on tap, but not so much the grapefruit shandy.
Yeah, you can get a lot of Line and Kugel stuff on tap here just because we have everything on tap. But obviously, Line and Kugel is local, so yeah, that's like the drink of choice at all of the summer festivals.
So what time do you get off tomorrow?
Yeah. Right. Where did you say you were? We'll be right there.
Charlotte, pick me up. Let's go.
The car full of women just barreling to Milwaukee.
We honestly, we keep trying to contact Line and Kugel's because we talk about their beers so much. We're like, can you just sponsor our podcast, like, just once?
They just ignore us. Like, what the fuck?
They do. Vandermills at least, like, retweets us sometimes.
Oh man, I would love to be sponsored in some sort of fashion by Vandermills. Like, oh my god, I would just die.
Yes,
I've totally roasted in my fridge right now, and that's definitely my weekend right there.
I told you, these are our people.
Yeah, there we go. See, on that note, I can say that right now, I am sipping on a Vandermill totally roasted.
Oh, so good.
Maybe if they're going to retweet us, I should start drinking them.
Should anyway. Because, see, I want us to do, like, a special one-off all-beer podcast, all-beer.
I know. I thought we were going to do that.
We said we were going to do it.
You should come back and do that with us.
Yeah.
We said we were going to do it.
We should talk about the ones that retweet us.
Ashley, what you drinking, darling?
Buffalo Trace bourbon.
Ooh. Okay then.
Straight out the bottle?
Yeah.
Should be straight out of the bottle, but no, I have it with some Coke. Oh. Coca-Cola.
She sounds so sweet when she says that. Some bourbon.
Like, I'm just drinking some Buffalo Trace.
Buffalo Trace bourbon. Love it. Yeah, that's what I got. And some water. Gotta stay hydrated.
Yeah.
I had some coffee with my wine.
You can be wide awake drunk.
Mm-hmm. I know how to do this. Okay, I'm a professional.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag God school.
Bianca.
What you drinking, babe?
Like Alicia, I just poured the last of a bottle of wine into my wine glass, but I'm drinking some pink wine. Yeah, I got some rosé going
pink
over
wine,
here.
Pink ladies.
Some pink wine. Yeah, the Malbec rosé.
I always feel sort of faintly ashamed when I drink a rosé somehow.
I never do.
Good.
I never feel ashamed. I embrace the rosé, you know.
Teach me your ways.
You know, it's getting warm out. I just want some pink wine. Relax.
And talk to my friends about wine. Video games.
Pink wine.
Yeah. Embrace the pink wine.
See, it's getting warm. I'm starting to dream of the sneaky sneaky again.
It is not warm. What planet do y'all live on? I'm freezing.
It's totally warm. Listen, we ain't all from Texas.
I know. I'm from Michigan. 50 is warm. What's wrong with you?
Hey. Yeah, seriously. 50 is when you start to break out the shorts and the tank tops. Seriously.
Like, I don't want my cardigans today. I'm like, woo, it's warm in here.
Well, I did turn the air conditioning on, but I still wear the coat when I go outside. So I'm an enigma, I guess. I do not like to be hot.
I don't like to be hot either, which is why I'm like, don't get any warmer.
But it's like the heat. I like it, but I like a dry heat. So this humidity.
You came to the wrong place. I mean, I'm really glad you came here because I love you.
I love you too.
But
I know.
You chose wrong.
What am I doing here?
This is like some swampland.
I know.
Like somebody picked up part of Louisiana and just dropped it on our asses.
I know. Yeah.
Like, you guys live in Indiana? What do you say about you want like a lot of wind and some swampland and some high humidity, right? All those things.
All the things.
Go. Also tornadoes.
Of course. The wind is the worst. The worst.
Like Indiana. Worst. Where we got to call the governor to ask him if burn our periods, yes. and we never know what the fuck to wear.
Mm-hmm. Sam would like us to talk about video games. Sam,
I would like us to talk about something other than periods and swampland.
They all go together.
I mean, swampy periods.
Really?
Really? The two who have finished the bottle of wine are just cackling. All right. So, Nico, you've joined us on this on this auspicious occasion.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tell us. I mean, it's been a blast talking to you so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, what have you been up to since Justice Points ended?
Ew.
Sadly, at the end of last year, I was really, really sad. I saved that last episode till like almost the end of January. I was like, I'm not gonna listen to it because as long as I don't listen to it, it's not over.
Yeah, yeah, we got a lot of people who were, you know, rightfully sad, and it was a mostly mutual decision. Basically, both of us were kind of a little bit done with video games, and Zufi basically was like, I kind of want to just do non-video game stuff, and if you replace me, that's totally fine. I totally understand. I'm like, there's no way I could replace you. You know, so we just decided to, you know, go out with a bang while the podcast is still, you know, well-loved, unlike The Simpsons, you know. So, but what I've been doing since then has been basically just taking a very well-earned break, because I had podcasted every single weekend with maybe one or two exceptions for, you know, 2.5 years mm-hmm. straight. And that's multiple podcasts, like three at the highest point, three podcasts, and editing most of them myself.
Yeah.
So I had no free time, and now I work very much a full-time salary job. I don't really have a lot of free time anymore. I also gave up like MMOs. I also gave up like a lot of stuff that like just kind of sucks up my time. So I decided that I'm just going to take a break for a while. I'm just going to take a break, let myself recharge, you know, just, and so I haven't actually been doing much of anything like that people would consider like productive or post podcast. Like, I think I'm starting to get back into a place where I feel comfortable and want to invest the time again and into doing creative stuff. I've been working a little bit on my writing here and there, but mostly my work has just kind of been keeping me super busy, which is kind of sucky because my work is not creative. It's not related to media or games at all. It's very much a like 9-to-5 office job. So I feel like my soul sucking, like it's just draining out of my body. So the need to make something creative is actually like very close to me because I kind of need an outlet for a lot of my thoughts. But I've been moving more into like thinking and talking about like film and TV versus just video games, because I think that having a multidisciplinary approach to media criticism is what makes you a better media critic and feminist. So mostly I've just been reading up, as I usually do, just like trying to read and absorb a lot of different voices on a lot of different topics within gaming, outside of gaming. If I had to like give a shout out to like somebody's work that I'm like real jamming on right now, it would be Angelica Bastian, who writes this like really wonderful column over at Vague Visages, which is a like a film crit site. Mm-hmm. She's been writing a whole like column every week that basically talks about the different kinds of like quote unquote like mad women in films and what that kind of trope means, and kind of really like deconstructing it and talking about it through the sort of essence of like different characters in films. Like she did one on The Witch. She did one on Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. She like did like quite a few just like really, really great pieces. She mostly focuses on horror films, but she also does a lot of like other, you know, woman-centered filmographies and stuff like that. And she's just a fantastic media writer in general. She's just a great critic and she's a great writer. So I've been really like digging her work, and she's been like really inspiring me to like pick apart my own feelings about a lot of films that I've been watching lately, because film is definitely the subject that I actually have the most experience with versus video games. So that's kind of what I've been up to, other than like I said before, you know, like shit posting on Twitter. I really like being funny. Like, I like making jokes on Twitter because it's more entertaining when I'm at work than like getting into arguments with people. Like, I'm I'm trying to like live a more peaceful life and be more assertive versus aggressive. I don't know. Like, I, you know, I'm almost 34 and listen. but it's like, I spent quite a many years on Twitter, getting into fights with people, and it wasn't good for my mental health. And I don't think it was good for a lot of people that like follow me. So for me, it's a lot more fun to be on Twitter if I just talk about the things that are really important to me in a way that's funny, in the way that's like funny and uses humor to kind of sabotage a lot of like critical ideas about media and stuff like that. I mean, I'll still curse somebody out if they're being an asshole to me, but it's like I try to kind of back away from some of the like trash fires that happen on Twitter, because you know what, it's like, oh man, I would rather privately grouse about that with friends than like, I feel that my life is better served by putting my energy into publicly being funny and talking about things that I like versus feeling compelled by the community to constantly have to be like this like big spokesperson for different perspectives. I feel like that's really limiting, and it makes me not feel like a human being anymore. So I just kind of stopped doing that for a while, I guess is a good way of putting it. So yeah, that's what I've been up to.
I think that's a great way to put it. I mean, because I'm the same way. Well, I'm similar on Twitter. Like, I'll retweet stuff and I'll chat with people and I'll say what I need to say. Very occasionally, I'll get really pissed off and go off on a Twitter rant. And then what I save all my, I'm just going to get up on my soapbox and let everybody have it for the podcasts. Because I will bring out the soapbox on podcast nights sometimes from time to time.
And that's a good format for it, because guess what, with the exception of like your hosts, which nobody can run up and be random and interrupt you on a podcast. So.
I was, because before you said with the exception of your hosts, I was gonna say, have you met Alicia?
Hey. Yo. So it's really funny because I don't have as much time to be as active on Twitter as I have been in the past. And I miss it, you know, like the constant engagement and the community. But I did get called out during we had a conference last weekend. And I got called out by Alex during our presentation. She's like, one of us is really active on the Twitter and the Reddit. I'm like, I don't know who you're talking about. Oh, I'm gonna look over here. But at the same time, like, lately, I've just been more absorbing and reading. Mm-hmm. And there is a piece in that, too, where you're just, like, seeing what's happening and pulling back and looking at the patterns, you know? But it also kind of makes me feel like I'm tracking a serial killer wall. Because social media can be such a dumpster fire at times.
Yeah. It's all about conserving the energy for things that really do matter to you versus like feeling like, I think that's the thing, is that like you get an audience and then it feels like they're just kind of waiting around for you to like make this like big statement about every single thing that's happening. And I'm just like, I'm just one person. I only have so many hours in the day. If you're following me because you need to know the, like, direction your little, like, social justice boat should be going, that's, like, so not a good idea, because you should be thinking critically for yourself, you know? And I just want to have, like, conversations, and I just want to, like, pick stuff apart from a critical perspective and have those, like, you know, productive arguments versus, like, I am the feminist on high, and I hand down these pronouncements to you and these laws of 10, and here is what you should be doing, here is how not to be problematic, and I'm like, that's not what I'm here for, and that shouldn't be what I'm here for, you know, so.
Even though those pronouncements from on high, hey, I'd follow you just for that,
Never wear white after Labor Day.
Though. I agree. I'm sorry, I'm not giggling. Because there's something I want to say.
Okay.
And I have pronounced this in that way from, like, feminist on high position, though. I mean, I'm not really on high. I'm just me. Man, lately the thing that makes me so sad, upset, angry, all the things, are all the women I see apologizing for their very existence.
Yeah. Yeah.
So sorry, but I have some feelings right now. I'm so sorry, but I need some help.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Just, oh, why did we get to this point where we have to apologize just to be?
Yeah. That's the best thing that happened to me for my self-esteem and my confidence is I got rid of sorry. I got rid of I think. Yeah. From my statements on social media. I don't apologize. I don't preface what I'm saying with a conditional or some sort of way of, like, backing away from my opinion. And, like, it was definitely a fake it till you make it situation. You know, like, there are still moments where I'm like, oh, sorry for this, you know, sorry for having emotions and being a human being. But once you start recognizing that you're doing that, and you pull out of yourself, and this is something I learned in therapy when I was going through therapy for anxiety management, is that once you start to become consciously aware of how you're saying things, what you're saying, it becomes a lot easier to start picking that stuff out before you type it down. And I just noticed that, like, I just stopped caring what other people thought of me as much when I took that stuff out of my Twitter feed, you know? And I'm sure that people probably think that I'm just, like, this, like, glossy asshole now because I don't, you know, I don't qualify my statements a lot, but it felt very empowering to do that. So it's, I'm appreciative you brought that up, because that's actually something that I noticed quite a bit. I'm just like, man, it, like, improved my life so much when I stopped, yeah, apologizing for my feelings.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. It's okay to feel.
Yes.
Yeah. Everybody does it, really.
Your thoughts are okay. Your thoughts are important. If you are having them and you believe in them, then they are important. You know? Just put it out there.
Witness me! You guys, I have, like, 2 drinks of wine left, so things are getting serious in my home.
Ooh. So
the only thing I have left is whiskey, so
don't you have to get up in the morning?
Can we talk? No, I don't. Can we talk about Rust?
Yes.
Yes.
Unless somebody has something to add to what Apple Cider Nico is doing with her time. Rust. All right, let's talk about Rust. So, just to add a little context, Rust was a thing, serious toxic shit community at times, because, you know, you spawn and people are like, ah, oh, newbie, we eat you, and you die. And then they added a thing where, like, they added black people, and you could just randomly spawn as a black guy, and the internet had a meltdown. Oh, no, I have to be a black man. Ah, oh, life is terrible. And then things calmed down a little bit. People got used to it. Some left, some stayed. And then they added women.
Yes.
And this is where we are now. Mm-hmm. And now, I'm sorry, but some of the tweets and arguments about this have been so hilarious. Like, oh, I don't want to be a woman because now I get, like, rapey comments. Like, really?
Tell me about this. Tell me about your rapey comments that you're getting.
In your little video game, yeah.
Tell Remember me about all those that. Times that we said, like, you know. But the development team has been really, like, proactive on this, going, listen, you don't get to choose who you're born as. That's just the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that our guest has some feelings.
So, and this is something I did get into an argument about. I'll say it was a peaceful, intelligent argument. It was like a discussion more about this topic. And the thing is that, like, it's valuable to me to preface by saying I don't have any good answers for this. Mm-hmm. I don't have any good answers for the kinds of questions that I'm trying to ask and interrogate myself and the game about. Is so a lot of people, and I don't necessarily disagree with this, you know, as you stated, think that this is very interesting and that the developers are kind of trying to be proactive about this and how they feel about it, and that it's absolutely randomized, but it's tied to your Steam ID, so you're like kind of locked into that even if you die. So yep. You could very well turn out to be someone completely different from who you are as a player, or you could be somebody the same, you know, on every level. You could, you know, you're a white guy and you wind up being a white guy, you know, or whatever.
Woo, white guys.
Yeah. So for me, though, what made me kind of sit up and kind of think about this is that quite a few people that I know mentioned that having gender in particular be randomized, and also binary, I'll say that, it's binary, mm-hmm. it's man or woman, mm-hmm. Having gender be randomized, hard locked to Steam ID, was really upsetting to them, because they are either, you know, gender queer, gender variant, trans, you know, just a lot of people who, for them, being able to control what gender your character is, if given the option, because, you know, a lot of us have to play games that do not represent us in the slightest, you know, whether that be race or ability or gender or anything like that. And that's definitely a problem in games, is that, but I don't necessarily know if the randomization is necessarily, that's the thing, is that I think from a, like, a critical perspective, I don't think mechanics in games are apolitical. That's absolutely not something I think. And this is a really good proof of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it's random, so it's technically considered neutral. Oh, you could just get whatever. But the second that you say that one kind of experience has an intrinsic social value, see, cis white dudes complaining that they are either black or a woman, you know, saying that one particular kind of experience has an intrinsic social value means that the randomization is not random or neutral. And if there are people saying, well, it's actually really important that I get to pick my gender, that also detracts from the idea that this is a net positive necessarily. And that's also important to me, too, as a cis woman. You know, like, a lot of games you have to just be forced to play a guy because you don't get any other options. And so when I play video games, I like to play as a woman if I have that choice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I think the randomization option is doing is a kind of like a tech way of looking and trying to solve a social problem that's nuanced, complex, and varied. Mm-hmm. Gender and race are not, I mean, okay, a lot of, you know, like, you can argue, but they're societal constructs, but they're also super important to people and also mean very, very deep, important things to people. You know, like, your gender is very intrinsic and special to people, and also race isn't just a neutral value in our world, and neither is gender. So randomization doesn't do that perspective justice, I think, is my kind of complicated feelings about it in general.
That's
I
that, go ahead.
No, no, no.
Ashley and I today, when we led discussion on Adrian Shaw's book with our class, which is mostly undergrads, and then us and Sam, we talked about this when we chose games for them to play Tuesday, and then today when we led discussion about not necessarily wanting them to be uncomfortable, but asking them to confront the moments in which they are uncomfortable. And asking them to think about, like, what does it feel like to you if you enter a space where, in fact, you are the minority? And our class is largely, you know, white, male. In the women are white. We have not a great deal of diversity in class, a little bit, but not much. But thinking about things in that way of, like, how so often a good half of the video game audience is entering a space in which nothing seems designed for them. So I'm with you. There's like a back and forth on this. Like, it's a very complicated situation. Like, I like that this game is pushing something. Like, you're going to be somewhere. But also, there is an underside to that where, like, having the agency to choose who you will be is really important to some people. But the third sphere here to talk about in this argument is that you don't have to play the game. And that's what some of the arguments get back to. When all these people are like, oh, I'm forced to play a woman, I'm like, well, you know, remember all those times you told us we didn't have to play a game?
Yeah.
Hey, bro. Also, as a side note before you guys continue, I have purchased this game on Steam, and I've never started it. I'm going to do so right now and see what it gives me.
Ooh, real time. Real time experiment.
I like it.
Yeah, so, and I was going to say,
I'm going to start a character.
I think what's interesting about it is that I've been kind of torn, too, in terms of it was easier for me to make a decision about how I felt about the randomization when it was just race. Because, you know, as a Black woman, I mean, the number of times that I've been able to play myself or play as a Black woman in a game, you know, you can really count those times on the fingers and toes that you have. But once they threw sex into it and they were like, well, now we're going to choose for you. And it wasn't until I heard someone make a really articulate argument about non-cisgendered folks and the randomization that I was like, well, damn, there's my privilege, because that never occurred to me, right? And I was like, and I would be really pissed off if that were the case. If it was like, oh, here's my body, and I may have been born female bodied, but I see myself as male, and then I go into Rust because I really want to play this game, and it makes me male. I think because I said if I was born into a male body, I was like, I forgot what I said when I started out that argument. But I was, it assigns me the sex that I was born as I was born into, and I would be like, you know what? That's really problematic for me. And it wasn't until I thought about it from that angle that it did become problematic. Because when it was just race, it pissed me off a little. I mean, and maybe that's because my own kind of gender queerness kicks in more when I start to think about it in those ways, then the whole race thing, because I was like, well, fuck it. If I get assigned to being white, you know what? I've been white in games for 40 fucking years. So, you know, I'm white in another game. And, you know, it's not the end of the world. But when you start thinking about the way sex plays into it, it became a whole lot more problematic.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can definitely see both arguments, but like I said, I think it became more problematic for me with this last update.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, I think the kind of maybe the closest thing I've come to kind of an answer to my own feelings is mostly just that if we had a games industry that valued and gave space to more diverse creators being able to author and create and allow other people to play positive representations or narrative representations that were positive or authentic or were centering a different sort of narrative or perspective, that maybe this wouldn't rub so much salt in the wound, I guess. Yeah. Like, yeah. You're allowed to have rust, kind of like maybe fluke, like maybe fuck this up a little bit. If we had more spaces where I could just be a queer woman more often in video games, or, you know, people could play, you know, the gender that they are, or the race that they are, or
as anything. Ashley often says, like, pick curly hair when you make a character. Like,
exactly. You know, like, Rust would have the ability to fuck up a little bit more if we had the ability to be ourselves on a more day-to-day basis in gaming, because I think that's kind of, as much as I do see the value and the interest of leading people who are not marginalized through an experience that does make them uncomfortable, if we just gave more space to people who are often very marginalized, more space to just be themselves on a regular basis in gaming, you know? It's tiring to keep centering non-marginalized people as being just the focus all the goddamn time.
And the thing is that as many interesting discussions as this could inspire, the people who need to have those interesting discussions aren't going to have them about this. They're instead just shitposting and like, oh, I can't believe I have to have a vagina. This is some bullshit. I want a refund. Like, that, there's nothing there. Also, I have to say that this game actually froze my computer, and I'm really pissed off about it. So, fuck us.
Thumbs down.
Politics, god damn it.
Yeah.
Not really.
Shame Rust. Like, I did, like, it was also a hullabaloo about, like, the penis randomization. Like, you get a random penis size too.
Right.
And I was like, that's interesting, I guess.
Don't you, like, get a random penis size when you're born? I mean, I wasn't born with one. But I don't think you get to choose.
Yeah, so, but that was, like, apparently, like, a big deal, and I was just like, oh, okay. You know, like, I don't understand this at all. But apparently, I think that's also, like, the bodies are also randomized, like, for the women characters, too, so I'm just like, oh, geez, that could go down a rabbit hole as well, just how we interpret our perceptions of women's bodies based on what they look like, you know, with, like, how we, you know, over-sexualize certain races and certain, you know, boob sizes and things like that. Like, that's just a whole other kettle of fish as well, that Rust is tempting now with this kind of stuff. So, I don't know.
Yeah. What a time to be alive.
Leave it to Alicia.
I'm full of mic drops. That's how I roll. So, anybody want to add anything about this particular controversy? Because I have one more controversy I'd like to address.
Oh, what's the controversy?
Yes, do tell.
What is it called now? My computer's frozen. I can't even restart anything because then I'll lose Skype.
The social autopsy?
Rust! Oh. What?
Are you talking about social autopsy?
Yes. Yes. Yes, I am. So, there was a Kickstarter, and I say was because it was suspended today, for a service that would aggregate, how do they word it? Let's just say internet abuse and trolling behavior. And if your identity was associated with some measure, we don't know what, some rubric of internet abuse, you were going to be entered into this database. Well, the noble goal of trying to end harassment culture, which, you know, I can get behind, but... Ooh, boy, talk about a kettle of fish. This is all the fish, all the kettles. There's something very dangerous about making lists of anyone. And who I think is an abuser, quote unquote, is not maybe who Bianca thinks is an abuser, is not maybe who Sam thinks is an abuser, is not maybe through who Nico Apple Cider Rich thinks is an abuser, or Charlotte. So, I mean, like, list making becomes really troubling really fast. This gets back to what we were talking about earlier with the public shaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think there was anybody who looked at this and was like, yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say about public shaming. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It's all very, very complicated.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if anybody was following this controversy.
Yeah. I think what's even more problematic is the notion of attaching money to it, right? So you have to pay to kind of participate, but then at the same time it's like, well, so if I pay to participate and I back your Kickstarter, does that mean that you probably won't put me on your list? Or there were all kinds of ethical implications. When you start attaching money to that.
I was just calling. I was calling out Ashley. I was like, "Look, ethics, yay! Hey, ethics." I mean, that's really because people who have power, which often translates to money, often get some kind of immunity for things like this. Mm-hmm. So this really puts that on the table. Like, if I back you, does that mean I'm cool? Even if I've been a shitbag?
Yeah.
It was a troubling little project. I understand the impetus. I, too, would like to see an end to online harassment, but I don't think this is the way. I don't know if I can follow where your torch is leading.
Right.
Yeah.
Where's the transparency, too? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the whole thing, is when you want to curate things for people's safety, you absolutely cannot hide behind a moniker or an opaque nickname. That's the thing, is that the community itself should be, you know, all collaboratively responsible for this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and because, that's the only way that everybody gets held accountable and everybody shares the same information and everybody gets to be part of that process, you know? And like you said, a lot of it has to do with power. Curating a list where anybody who is found to be on that list is automatically painted an abuser with no recourse for that. That's not going to get abused at all. Yeah. No, that never happens.
We've never had any trouble with that ever.
No. List of people that, get you blacklisted places and paint you in a negative light. That's always been so secure and good.
You know what else I hear was really successful? Internment camps.
McCarthyism. Let's go back to that.
Just
Yeah, okay, but it's seriously, it's just a bad look. Just don't do it.
And it's really, and I'm going to, I went to the Kickstarter page because I have been following it, but I had not gone to the Kickstarter page until like just now. So I go to the Kickstarter page, and who do they have like right on the front page? It's like, hey, here's all this cool stuff we're doing, and here's what we're going to do. And they got this big ass picture of Taylor Swift on the front page. And I'm like, see, that's where you would have lost my money right there, even if I was considering it, which I wasn't. Taylor Swift in and of herself is problematic, because here you're talking about a very specific kind of advocacy.
White fragility? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, or white fragility, yes. I mean, so, I mean, this in and of itself is problematic because Taylor Swift is problematic. I mean, right. For me, as a black woman, as a black feminist, Taylor Swift is problematic.
But Sam, yeah. Hashtag squad goals. Honestly, if I was going to be my most cynical self, because of the fact that it's called something like social autopsy, number one, yeah. Like, it's not 1999 and Hot Topic. Okay. number two, I honestly feel like this is yet another attempt for some people who are acting in some nefarious ways to basically just fleece money under the guise of pretending to be social justice. Like, we've seen stuff like this happen before, where they're like, ah, ha, 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 we're going to pretend to be those bad feminists and we're going to make money off them by spewing their own language back at them. And I'm just like, this feels like that again.
It did. It felt like I was reading the Kickstarter and I was like, is this a parody? Like,
yeah, it kind of feels like a big scam.
It's all like, could it be a scam or a parody, or is this just like peak white feminism?
Yeah, like
that's a good question.
Oof.
At a certain point, if it's indistinguishable, Also, why do you need money for that? Like, I could put together an Excel spreadsheet for free,
and not have to charge anybody $75,000.
Apropos of nothing. My students right now are doing crowdfunding campaigns, and I asked them this week, I'm like, so what are your startup costs? And they're like, we don't really have any. I'm like, so you don't need to crowdfund then. And the campaign, and I was like, are you in my class? Like,
I'm so glad I'm not, actually. Because I would say something stupid. I would.
But I don't know. I just... And I made this point earlier before we were live, so I'm going to make it again here now that we might make it into the final, depending on how drunk I am, I'm going to make the point. Okay. You can cut that out, Sam. My fault there. She won't. She's mean. Everybody has come out against this. Like, I don't know anybody who's like, you know what, that social autopsy seems like a really good idea. We should back it. But it's fascinating to watch the reactions on, like, specifically Gamergate hubs, and then specifically anti-Gamergate hubs, and then people in the middle who are like, what the fuck is this? But I find it very fascinating, because I study angry young men on the internet, to watch the Gamergate spaces talk about this as, like, a doxing hub, and, you know, how it can so easily be abused. And I'm like, you know, I agree with all of that. It's also the same argument I've made repeatedly about Deep Freeze.
Yes. Right.
Yep.
Deep Freeze being this whole quote-unquote fact-based database indicted journalists. I'm like, okay, hang on. Point A, many of the people cataloged on your site are not actually journalists. Mm-hmm. B, many of your facts are not facts but opinions. And C, putting these things together in some kind of blacklist is really damaging. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we're indicting here with this idea of social autopsy.
Well, they're just scared it's going to be used against them.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it bad. Like, hold up, you guys, that's us. So we're against them. But when we
can I just say that the next time people call us journalists, I can't even.
I know, it's always so funny. They're like, oh, look at this poor journalism and Not Your Mama's Gamer. I'm like, whenever we have something controversial up, I see you guys looking at our about page, so I'm pretty sure you realize at this point that we're not journalists.
but they
facts
they
don't matter.
No. Right.
Facts don't
Everything
matter.
Everything is mutable. It's all a spectrum. Life is a wheel.
I have to say this, though. I have to say one thing about this, in that the interesting thing about all of these, the Gamergate guys, suddenly feeling the, like, eyes of God resting on them in the idea that maybe they would turn up on a list of, like, the bad people.
Mm-hmm.
I try to inform the guys on my Twitter on a regular basis about this, that since time immemorial, is if you're a genuinely bad guy, capital B, capital G, everybody in your vicinity already knows that. Like, the back channeling.
It's not a secret.
Yeah, it's not a secret. The back channeling that happens, particularly if a guy is bad news or abusive, especially now with social media, like, the back channeling that I have heard within just the game space, like, you thought you got away with it. Nope, everybody knows. We're just too polite to bring it up to your face. But everybody talks about it behind your back. Yeah. So it's like,
behind your back, it's hashtag you tried it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we all know who tried to go into somebody's DMs with a dick pic, okay? Everybody knows that shit. It's just that, like, a lot of people do recognize that going public with that sort of stuff isn't always the best thing to do, or it could very well backsplash onto somebody. So just because there's not a list, a codified list, doesn't necessarily mean that people don't know you're a bad person. However, right. I just wanted to bring that up.
No shit. On that note, because we don't want to keep you all night long and we're known for going long, if there's anything else you want to throw out there and let people know, or stuff you want to tell us that we didn't talk about, here's a fine chance to do that.
I guess, I don't know, just try to be cool and nice to everybody on Twitter, and just remember that the people you're talking to, very often women, are human beings, and that maybe give us a break and don't get into my mentions with some random shit. So, I don't know. Oh, I know. Just be cool. Work for the weekend. I don't know.
I want to applaud, but it doesn't really come across that well on the podcast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody's mentions who have been pure garbage for the last week. Yeah.
Oh my god.
we you
stepped
know what?
Up in it.
Yeah, we did. Some of us did anyway. So, Nico, let me just say that you are more than welcome to come back and talk to us whenever you want, because this has been a
blast.
You
get that podcast itch,
yes, please.
Right? You can.
I do have the podcast itch, and hopefully, cross your fingers, people will be able to hear me in their ears on a regular basis very soon, TM.
Yay.
Ooh.
I'm anxious.
We'll be waiting with bated breath.
That's an exclusive. An exclusive.
That's an exclusive.
Today on Not Your Mama's Gamer. That's not journalist. Exclusive. Worldwide exclusive.
We will once again.
Not Your Mama's Gamer.
We will once again get the voice of Nico speaking light into the darkness.
Ooh, that was pretty. It was very poetic.
That was good. Yeah. I like that. I like that.
Light into the darkness. That's what we do, right? That's what we tell ourselves we do.
We kind of mutter it. We kind of mutter light into the darkness. We're like, God damn, I'm gonna fucking fight.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, really. It was a real treat. I always love talking to y'all and just having a good time. So
Yay.
Well, thanks for coming, like I said. And anytime you got, you know, even after you're done with your hiatus, if you just want to come back.
Oh, sure.
Love to have
I will.
You.
Oh, I'll be back.
I'm coming back. On that note, that brings us to the end of episode 125. So until episode 126.
So many episodes.
So many episodes. So much light into the darkness.
so much alcohol.
That too. So until next time, y'all, stay warm, stay dry. And as always, my friends, game on.
Game on. Game on. Woo!